Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Earlier this week, the 2015 Kids Count in Delaware Factbook was released, offering the latest snapshot of information on the well-being of children in the first state. It's the 20th annual edition of Kids Count, which tracks data in a variety of areas involving kids, ranging from infant mortality to dropout and graduation rates to the number of kids living in poverty. The idea is to provide the kind of information that can help policymakers and others develop plans to address these issues, and then help track how well they're working. Joining us on The Green this week is Janice Barlow, Director of Kids Count in Delaware at the Center for Community Research and Service at the University of Delaware, to talk to us a little bit more about the report. Janice, thank you so much for joining us this week on The Green.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, before we delve into this year's report, it's 20 years of Kids Count reports here in Delaware. And I wanted to ask you at this juncture how you feel it's lived up to its mission of not only tracking this data, but helping inform policy and assess the effectiveness of those policies.
Well, I'm probably a little biased on that, but I think we're doing a great job. Kids Count has really worked throughout the 20 years to get the message out to policymakers and advocates and people in the nonprofit and the public sectors who create programs for kids and their families. And we're seeing the data being used by a variety of people, especially with the change in our society to electronic communications. We're getting it out to more people than ever before. So I think that we're doing well on that. But of course, we always are looking for how can we get this to be used by more people and for it to go further.
And to that point, what do you feel like you guys have learned over the years and maybe what has changed in what you're doing to make it more effective and provide that information either better or, as you mentioned, to more people?
Well, one of the things that we've decided to do is we've stopped printing our full version of the book. It's now up to more than 250 pages, and it's really cost prohibitive. So we've changed to a digitized format, and the book is available on dekidscount.org, and it's free for anyone to go on and download. It is in a digitized version, as I said, which it kind of looks like an online magazine where you can flip through pages and you can, there are internal links, there are external links, so we refer people out to other data. In addition to that, we have a listserv that we push out data through. We are active on social media, Facebook and Twitter, those types of things. So all of these emerging technologies give us just a little bit different ways to reach different groups of people.
Is there more depth to the information now than there was 20 years ago?
Absolutely. 20 years ago, we were reporting on 10 indicators of child well-being. Now, we still report on those original 10 indicators, but now our book has more than 100. And every year, we have a data committee who looks at the book, who looks at the data we report, and who look at what's going on in the big wide world and give us recommendations for where we should make additions, what else we might be able to get our hands on in order to make that picture better every year.
Is there a fine line between giving more data and at some point having too much data, that swamping people in data?
Right. Data overload is definitely a worry. And it kind of goes to the accessibility issue. If you give people too much information, it reminds me of the old Census Bureau reports of data and data and data and data, just table upon table and just numbers, it overwhelms. And so one of the ways we try to combat that just a little bit is we try to be very visual. We bring in lots of graphs and charts and maps so that it's a little less intimidating, it's a little less overwhelming. In all of our publications, we feature photographs of Delaware kids so that it's inviting so people can look at the kids and realize that, these aren't just numbers we're talking about. There's a face behind each of these data points.
Let's talk a little bit about this year's report, and there's a number of areas where we see improvement for kids in the first state. And one that I recall being maybe one of the more major sources of concern years ago was the number of teens having kids. How much has that improved, and is there a sense of why the needle has maybe moved in that area?
Well, actually, as you said, this was our 20th year edition, so we looked back at 20 years. So we took the data from 1995, and we're comparing it to what we have today. And as you said, teen birth has been a dramatic improvement. We have fewer births, we have fewer teens having babies. Back in 1995, it was 33.5 per 1,000 girls. It's dropped almost in half, 16.2 per 1,000 girls in the most recent data year. As for your second question on why that's happening, there are a number of theories out there, and researchers haven't, you know, kind of landed on one consensus. Some of the theories out there are better access to contraception. Other people think it has more to do with the economy. There are a number of prevailing theories, but no one single leading factor that we can point to with certainty.
At the same time, low birth weight babies and infant mortality remain concerns in Delaware, correct?
Absolutely. In Delaware, infant mortality and low birth weight, birth in particular, remains very high above the national average. In the national narrative of things, the nation started improving, and Delaware, for some reason, did not. We were still struggling while the nation was making these improvements. There's a lot of work going on around this issue, a number of partners coming together in order to try to improve things. And in the most recent years, the past 2 to 3 years, we've been seeing very, very small incremental improvements in our Delaware data. So it's a hopeful sign because, you know, this is a big issue. And so it takes a lot of people, it takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of focus in order to move that needle just a little bit, but we're seeing it move.
Back on the plus side, the report also shows a big drop in the dropout rate and increases in graduation rates. How big are those gains when you look at it over that 20-year period?
Back in 1995, the number of teens who were not in school and not graduated, so that high school dropout, was 4.6, and it's now at 2.1. So again, practically in half.
And I guess that we've also seen some movement on the other side of that same equation, the graduation rates going up.
Yes, correct.
Are there still within those numbers some areas for concern when you break it down to different minority groups, those with disabilities, those type of factors? Are there still some areas, as you dig deeper into those numbers, where there's still some room for improvement in that educational area?
Mm-hmm. There are inequities. When we look at the data, we see disparities by race, by income. In education in particular, with the testing data, we see big disparities by income, not as much by race. When we look at dropouts and the graduation rates, we see disparities by both racial and ethnic, as well as income. We see disparities as well in students with disabilities. So yes, there are other concerns when we break down and we go a little bit deeper into the data.
And is that why it's important really to track this data and dig deeply into it? Because maybe that top line data might give you one impression, but as you dig deeper, there are other things that need to be looked at?
Absolutely, yes.
One of the other numbers that jump out, and I guess it's kind of tied to what you mentioned in terms of the economic disparity in education, is the percentage of kids living in poverty, which is, it looks like, nearly doubled in 20 years. What are we seeing there? And does that type of number have the potential to undermine some of the more positive trends we're seeing?
Yeah, poverty is very concerning because it is connected to so many every other indicator we report. A child doesn't kind of live in a vacuum. So if a child is in poverty, then obviously they're going to have fewer material resources. But then it can also impact their health, their safety, their education. So in particular, children who live in concentrated poverty, areas of 30% or more of the community in poverty, they have increased safety concerns. There may be environmental hazards. For instance, that could inflame asthma. And if a child is sick or chronically sick, then they're staying home from school more than their peers. And if they're not in school, they're not learning. We also know that children who grow up in poverty in the very early years tend to begin kindergarten behind their more affluent peers. So poverty does really affect everything else.
And beyond poverty, what are some of the other things you're looking at in terms of that family environment and economic sphere?
We're looking at family structure, whether we had already talked about births to teens, but then other types of family structure. Are children being born to single parents? Are they being raised by single parents? Because that has a good influence on whether or not they will be in poverty. These days, it's just really, really hard to get by on a single income, especially for low-income single mothers who are working or don't have the education beyond a high school diploma. The job market is such that it's difficult to find a livable wage job, a job where a single mother with a high school diploma can support an entire family.
As we wrap up, when you guys put this out each year, and maybe even more specifically this year, what are some of the things you're hoping will be done with the information? And is there hope that more can be done now because you have 20 years worth of information for people to look at and kind of make those comparisons that we've been talking about?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we hope that happens every year is that it brings an awareness that when we're making decisions, especially when those decisions have to do with policy, priorities, and programming, that we understand that it's based in data and it's based in what's really happening out there, because those things are going to have long-term consequences for our kids and, you know, kids that haven't been born yet but will be our kids in the recent, you know, in the soon-to-be future. This year in particular, because we are very concerned about the child poverty measure, we looked at best practices within this kind of area, and what we've been educating people on is the earned income tax credit, which is it's a safety net piece that's built into our tax structure where working low-income families can receive funds back at the end of the year at tax time. And research has shown that linking the EITC, an enhanced EITC, to increases in minimum wage is pretty much best practice for reducing child poverty. The EITC has been linked to better infant and maternal health, better school performance, and college enrollment for the children in the families who've taken the credit. And in Delaware in particular, our earned income tax credit is based on the federal credit, but ours is non-refundable. And so what we think is that if we enhance that, if we make it refundable, it will help more of our children who are in poverty to get out of that.
All right. Janice Barlow, Director of Kids Count in Delaware, thank you so much for joining us on The Green this week. We appreciate your time and insight.
Thank you.
The full Kids Count report, as Janice mentioned earlier, is available online at dekidscount.org. Up next, our political reporter, James Dawson, looks at the battle between hunters and a group of school children over the state's wildlife official animal, the gray fox. Stay with us. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.